is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk, all day. It is Wednesday, the 10th of November, 2021, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Well, good yawning this morning. Let me start this show off by apologizing for yesterday's show. I was a little shaky. I was a little off. Let me tell you why. I did run hot. See, a senior citizen, you know, somebody who I would say is a member of the 3 Score 10 and 10 gang, looked at me when I said to them, look, the 3 Score and 10 gang have a lot of questions. They got to answer. They have a lot to answer to younger generations of Bahamians. In particular, we were talking about the culture of predation and what I like to call the overproliferation of rapey by them in the Bahamas. And that senior citizen looked at me and told me that I am also responsible for this state of affairs in the Bahamas. And I could be honest, I almost fell out. I think to myself, look at me, human rights advocate for 20 years, been working in women's rights, intersectional women's rights, LGBTI rights, but ultimately, I mean, food security rights, migration rights, but ultimately working on a single principle that everyone has the right to a life free of violence. And the senior citizen can look at me and tell me that I am also responsible. Now watch this. Every generation has an obligation to itself and to other generations. We all are responsible to each other in many ways, for many things. I do feel some weight. I feel like, you know what, Erin? You could have just got one degree, got one good government job, whether you got married or not, had children or not, you could adopt some children and take them out of this life that they're in. And I feel bad, you know. Even though I'm an openly queer woman, it'll probably be extremely difficult for me to adopt a children, I still could have do a thing. And I feel some weight about that. I feel some weight about being underemployed and not having a home of my own that I could just offer solace and space to young women, to young parents, to young people who've been abandoned or made houseless or homeless, feel unsafe in their own homes. And I feel that, you know. And my generation, the truth is, we 45. We old people now. These are the sorts of responsibilities that we should be taking on. In fact, not one of our peers, not one child, should be left to walk the streets alone, to not know where they're going to get their next meal, to not know if they're going to spend a night safely in their own bed or in the bed they sleep in, because they ain't ever know they own bad unless they could do well in school and get a job and afford to get one themselves. So to some degree, we all bear some responsibility, you know. All of us. All of us. Especially those who continue to spend money that should be used towards collective development projects and solutions. We keep taking this money that we should be using to grow our country and spending it and wasting it on personal disposable experiences. So I went to Memphis in 2014. I went to the MLK Museum, which had been recently renovated and newly opened. And it was a beautiful sight. And at the entrance of the museum is a wonderful display of the names of people and families who've contributed over the previous 30 plus years to bring the museum to this state. It took them 30 years of active fundraising and consciousness raising to do that. To bring the Martin Luther King Jr. Museum to an acceptable point in the 21st century. But who is going to grow our country if all we're doing is, I live in the Bahamas, but I take Christmas, you know how people just take tea and take a lover, but I take Christmas in the Mediterranean. You live in the Bahamas. Your government spending all of our tax money to get the people to come here for Christmas, and you go and talk, but they're going to go stay in the Mediterranean and love myself. Who's supposed to build the institutions? Who's supposed to build the schools? Who's supposed to build the spaces so I could try get some young people in there so we could have some radical conversation like tomorrow when we're going to talk about the Dandekiat Edwidge lecture tomorrow night? And we're going to talk about the works of Sylvia Winter later on in November, or Voices Across the Diaspora. Who is going to build the institutions if we're spending the money on Teslas? Let me tell you how silly it is to invest your money in a Tesla in the Bahamas. Now, this is not a petty, biased, anti-capitalist perspective, you know. First of all, can you sue the government for not maintaining the roads at the standard necessary to maintain your car? A standard has been established, you know. A global standard has been established. You're running your car on electricity. Is there a stable electrical grid in this country anywhere? Is there? Is it at the end of Frank Watson Boulevard? Because I believe all nice things. Not an electrical problem at the end of Frank Watson Boulevard. What you buying a Tesla for? Who could repair it? You got to put your Tesla on the boat to take it to the mechanic to get it fixed, to bring it back, to break it up again? But that's what you want to spend your money on. We got to refocus ourselves. Now, you can focus on whatever you want to focus on, you know, but be real about it. You want to pretend to be a capitalist? You can't be, but you could pretend to be. You could pretend like you're making the money when really you're just a cog in Bezos' wheel. You're just a cog in Musk's wheel, in Gates' wheel. You're not really a capitalist, but you could spend your money. But here's what to do. Let's get rid of the hypocrisy. Be honest about what you're doing. Like the young folks say, stop running tape about your commitment to national endeavors and the love for your country and what you're prepared to do for love of country, this false patriotism. But you put your money where your heart is. There should not be a child unsupervised in this country. There are only 400,000 of us. We know that we have a history of running things from pirates to wrecking, let me say from wrecking to pirates, to rum running, to people running, to drug running, Not a child in this country should be unsupervised. Not a school should be without the resources they need to take care of children. There is enough money in this place. And I say this quickly because I got guests in the studio, and this is why I hesitated yesterday, because sometimes I just get in my feelings and run on. The money is there to build the institutions and mechanisms necessary to govern, necessary to create the environment required to call yourself a democratic and functioning country. There's enough money in this country to do whatever we want. See, that's why the government implemented its new tax plan. Trying to pull some of that money out, people, that y'all refuse to spend on your country and other people. But that's how countries grow. That's how the U.S. got so big. That's how developed nations do it. We could talk a little bit today about the child's advocate. It turns out we have very few. Now, when I say that, let me say this clearly. There are tons of people working their hearts out. They wake in sweat, blood, and tears to try and create safe places for children, working on programs to educate, enlighten, and keep people safe. There are tons of them. The teachers cooking breakfast. They got pot big enough to bathe children, and they cooking breakfast for their classes. But these people are primarily teachers and nurses and business people who have taken time out of their schedules to do what they know needs to be done. We are calling on people to do work that we should rightly identify as work and commodify it and pay people what they're worth, because our children are worth everything to us. I ain't even got no children. I got a niece, and she's letting me know every day, this is also my home, and I expect you all to treat me like I belong here, because I am a real human, and I'm honored to be given that charge. I know things are rough out there. We can talk about all of that. We can talk about this over the next couple of weeks as well. Things are rough out there, and parents are having a rough time making things work. Those of us that have it have to share it. And how do I know that? Because I grow up in a rich tradition of women who have it and know others don't, and they share it. Where there's knowledge, where there's resources, where there's money, where there's time, where there's space. That is my privilege, to have grown up in a village of women and men. And I ain't saying, you know, the privilege could be that they're scared of my mommy and my daddy and what they could do because of their connections in government. I don't know. None of us really know. None of us really know. And so we say, but for the grace of God, go I. Anyway, I did run on a little bit. And in that running on, I lost the time I put aside to talk about you bad drivers, including that driver whose license plate I will not call at this moment, or the rental car driver whose license plate I will not call at this moment, who are doing the ultimate foolishness on the road. But again, I want to draw to y'all this link between traffic and rape culture in the Bahamas. But before we get there, I got a caller on the line, I got a couple of texts, and I'm going to introduce my guest for the day. So I have two guests, one in studio and one studio and one in the Zoom room. My first guest is Miss Denise M. Major. She is an author, certified youth counselor and life coach, sex educator, mentor, mother, sister, friend. I know Miss Major as a sexual health and reproductive health activist and service provider as well. My second guest, Mr. Clark, is an IT professional and will be bringing a perspective that we sort of rarely hear to the discussion in the show. So before I bring them into the discussion, let me get to this caller. Caller, you are on the clock.
Good morning, Ms. Green, and your third guest named Sparky.
Good morning, Sparky. How you do?
You know, there's some things we don't like to talk about in our country. When you were talking about who is going to build the nation,
mm-hmm.
and if you look at it, right, basically all of our prime ministers came from the island of New Providence, not the island of Nassau that we call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we call it Nassau, it's island.
Yes, Bucky.
But the island is New Providence. Well, we know Perry Christie came from Eleuthera, his family came from Eleuthera. Mr. Ingram came from Abaco. Mr. Penland was born here, and I think Mr. Minnis was born here. Mr. Davis came from Cat Island. But one of the things we don't like to talk about when we talk about building a nation,
mm-hmm.
if you look at New Providence itself, one of the smallest islands set in the middle, I think the British established New Providence as the capital because of its harbor and protection. So when they, you know, they did the
storms
the,
and pirates.
The pirating and everything.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, how we could build a nation is because of, you said if it's rough out there. I think it's more like a tsunami out there, but it ain't rough there, you know. Look at Afghanistan, where the woman and the little child walking on the road don't know when a bomb could drop on their head.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't, a bomb could drop any moment.
Yeah.
In the house or walking on the road.
With no recourse.
You know? And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Then the people who drop the bomb could brag about it, kill a woman and a child, and then turn around and brag about it. We killed 90 yesterday.
Yeah.
Big thing, big deal. So, hey, but they ain't dropped nothing. They ain't dropped nothing on the palace where the king is live. Who's
that's
run things? Better drop it there. That end the war right there. Well, what I'm saying is, how we can build the nation if everybody leave the outer islands, where I think the most beautiful beaches and everything is, to come to the capital to live.
Thank you, look here, Sparky. That point you made right there. Thank you. I'm gonna cut you here. I want you to know how powerful that point is. But one of the things we don't talk about, we don't see the correlation, and I've mentioned it, I'm going to make a request with the press secretary to have the Minister of Housing on, but the impact of the housing crisis, right, or how the housing crisis intersects with rape culture and the perpetuation of rape culture and sexual violence, particularly towards minors in this town. I see in the paper today an FNM senator defending the young professionals housing program. Sure, in and of itself is probably a good idea, but juxtapose it to the existing housing crisis. Understanding, and the point that Sparky made, or the point that Sparky made leads to my point. There are so many people in New Providence that shouldn't be in New Providence, that don't need to be in New Providence. They shouldn't because of the density issue and the lack of housing available. They also shouldn't because of psychological issues. When you move people from the Family Islands to this hectic, chaotic, uncontrolled, unpoliced environment, you can cause great psychological trauma, especially if your housing situation isn't sound and comfortable. And so to the FNM senator, the problem with the housing program isn't the program in and of itself. It is that to launch that program in the midst of a housing crisis suggests that y'all are hearing and visually impaired. Like you can't see what's happening around you. But when you realize the link between the lack of adequate and safe housing and housing dynamics, and you look at the stats on minor live births and youth and minor pregnancies and youth pregnancies, you realize that there's an issue there. And we should be focusing on whether it's temporary and transitional housing with some degree of oversight for young people and particularly young parents, or it is a real, truly affordable housing program. Something has to work because you cannot be building homes or providing lots for young professionals while people have been sleeping in their cars for 4 years. Those young professionals could figure it out. They were smart enough to become young professionals. Okay. Thank you for that. Let me get to these texts, and I got to bring my guests in. I've taken too long. First text, Aaron, I have met many people with electric vehicles for years, and they are doing great. Not one of them didn't report that they didn't save loads on fuel, even when converted to electricity and maintenance. Yes, roads are bad and will destroy anything that rides on it, but electrical vehicles are very worth it. You see, in the neighborhood I live in for about 25 years, I have what you call unregulated electricity, where you could just look at your kitchen, you could just watch your lights and see the fluctuation in the power coming in, right? And then you could hear it. I could literally hear the fluctuation on the line, like the line is talking to me. I thought it was aliens, but it was BC. It's BC. And then the consistent power outages and surges associated with those power outages. And then the lack of information about outages and reconnections. And then it turns out my entire neighborhood is not on any sort of feedback or monitoring grid. So they don't know when the power's off. And when they turn the power back on in the general area, they don't know if my power's come back on or not. And so that is a part of what I base my reasoning on. Maybe you live at the end of Frank Watson Boulevard where they have beautiful electricity. Another text. Sorry, Texter, your text was so large that it would not, I don't think it would download. Please send it again. That was a text sent at 10:17. So good morning, Miss Major.
Good morning, good morning. Happy to be here.
How are you? And good morning, Mr. Clark.
Good morning, good morning.
How are you?
I'm in top shape. Thank you very much.
Good, good. And again, now Mr. Clark is an IT professional, but his contributions on the subject matter was, I would say, spot on, but was so intriguing and interesting and raised aspects of the discussion that are rarely raised that I felt the need to bring you into the conversation. So let's start here with my first question, or let me start here. Ms. Major, introduce yourself and then tell us what you think we should be prioritizing in this discussion.
Well, my name is Denise Major. As Erin introduced earlier, I'm a sexual rights and health advocate, mm-hmm. working in the field for the last 10 years. And this conversation is a timely conversation and one that should be ongoing. So looking at the list that you provided and the fact that we do have Mr. Clark here, we've been having this conversation for decades. Nothing that we are going to say today hasn't been heard before. We get all upset and bothered when things happen, but we have known about these things happening for quite some time.
Yes.
So I would like to actually start with Mr. Clark to hear that perspective of it in terms of how do we use data and information technology and then mold it all in.
All right.
So we can see why it's so important and how can we make this work for us? Because right. obviously for the past 50 years, what we have been doing hasn't been working. So right. let's try IT now.
Right. And let me say this, telling your children alone, oh, I ain't letting you go nowhere. I can't trust these people.
No.
Is not a solution. It may keep your children safe potentially, but it doesn't guarantee their safety.
And the key word is potentially, because who's in your house? When you do let them go to school, who's teaching them? How are they getting there? Who will they be interacting with? There's no 100% way to keep our children safe, but we can all do the best that we can.
All right. And so, Mr. Clark, when we talk about the importance of speaking up, I call it the importance of reporting, right? And breaking the silence, we're usually talking about creating a safe space for victims to talk. Mm-hmm. But breaking the silence is important because reporting is vital if we're going to find solutions.
And that's what we have been lax on reporting. We can't find proper statistics past 2013, 2015. Is anyone gathering these statistics?
Yeah. Mr. Clark, tell us why this is so important to you, or more about the intersection of data collection and solution creation.
Well, there are a couple of things. Mm-hmm. One is that data provides you with real information, not just real information in terms of words or narratives. But now you're talking about the facts. You're talking about not whether, let's say, a plant is green, or no, you're not talking about whether a child went from a bad situation at 5 years old to a good situation at 15 and how that happened. You're talking the details of when, where, what worked, what did not work. We can compare situations that worked and situation that did not work. We have a lot of variables. You can have a family with three daughters, mm-hmm. who grew up in a single parent home, but they took different paths, or their children took different paths. Mm-hmm. We need to know why. Mm-hmm. We need to know. We have statistics showing that in 2010 there were 12 live births of girls under 14, between 10 and 14, mm-hmm. 5 in 2011, 4 in 2012, 5 in 2013. Well, going forward now, what happens with them? Because we know the correlated circumstances that develop out of that. You know, when you have a situation like a child dying, that is an event. But there's a whole lot of events that happened before that. Mm-hmm. And it's great to throw up your hands and talk about the tragedy. But what are you going to do about that? How are you going to prevent that going forward? And the only way to effectively chart that course
is with data.
Is to look at what happened before it.
Yes.
And look at it in detail, and look at it seriously. So data, but solutions. We have our situation that 62.5% of live births happening to single mothers. Of the teen mothers, 98% of the teen mothers and unmarried. Mm-hmm. This is a hole in the roof.
Yes.
This is a hole in the roof. And instead of us looking for lotion, we're looking for buckets. Let's get some buckets to catch the water. The hole will take care of itself. That can't work. We have to stop. It's great that teachers make breakfast for their students, but that is not going to get us to solutions. We need to take a different approach. We need to look at real information. We need to develop programs that are effective, find out why they are effective so that we can repeat them.
Right. And we need these, we need to quantify and qualify these experiences in data because when a teacher has been feeding multiple classes for a year, right? We're not talking about a month, because a majority of the parents work in tourism and we know that they're on a slow period. But for 2 years, a teacher's been feeding classes, then we need to be able to pull that out in data to figure out.
Who are these children that she's feeding? How
right.
much is being spent? Where, like,
right.
stuff
are
like
these
that.
Parents enrolled?
Are they working? Are they enrolled in any other programs or any systems
right.
provided by the government or
are those, right, now, are those systems working? See, in the police, I make this connection between traffic and these things. In England, the police use traffic interdiction as their sort of main policing tool. If I see you on the road, right, the police officer said it. If I see you on the road and I look at your car and your car look like it have 2 inches of dust on it, it's a good chance that your MOT, like your inspection, is not up. It's a good chance. Mm-hmm. It's a good chance your tires are below the standard. So I'm going to stop you because if it's a good chance you don't have your MOT up to date, then it's a good chance there are other little laws that you break in as well. And so when you see a student is eating a school-prepared breakfast for 2 years straight, you have already identified an issue because that can't be the only thing that's not going correctly in this child's life or in their environment. And we should be able to see that. But we need to quantify it and qualify it so that advocates can then go to the labor union and say, look here, what's going on here? How many parents are unable to do these things and they're working?
But again, the information may be being gathered, but is it being used? And mm-hmm. is it being gathered consistently and correctly? When I look at the stats, for example, when we talk about the crime stats or rape stats, where are you getting your information from? Because if I am seeing 12 persons who have said, 12 women who mm-hmm. have said they've been assaulted or attempted, but your report is saying only five attempted rapes. Mm-hmm. We have to look at those gaps also. Why aren't these situations being reported? Right. Are they being reported? Are you? What is their definition of these crimes?
Are people attempting to report them and
are being turned away,
right,
or
facing a barrier? Yeah.
What's the barrier that we're facing?
And I think one of the social barriers is this concern about talking people business, mm-hmm. right? Is there a way that we can, Mr. Clark also, is there a way that we can collect this data and use it and primarily protect the identities of the victims? And go on. And store the data in a safe way, right?
I mean, I think that's already being done because we have the paper before us. We don't know who.
Okay, so you have some stats.
Yeah, we
right.
have stats.
That actually
already.
Is a focus. That is exactly one of the problems. Well, the thing is that you know, we can have those stats. One of the problems with sensitive things like this is identity and attaching information to people. But technology can deal with it. I mean, you can have, for instance, we look at healthcare, mm-hmm. and having a broad healthcare database. Well, nobody should be walking up to a medical facility in this country and calling their name. They mm-hmm. ought to have an identifier, a tag, a card, or whatever, and that card gives you access to that information. From there, you will identify who the person is to decide whether or not you go forward. Mm-hmm. And there's also a need to know. There are certain financial information that the medical personnel need not know. There is a medical information that the people who are dealing with billing and the like don't need to know. So there's technology to deal with all of that. And I think in the case of social information, that's critical. We have a blame you and point at you kind of society, and we don't need that. Is going to cause people not to participate, and we need people to participate willingly, because it's great to say, I know that in this neighborhood, an over the hill neighborhood, if you want to say, that certain things are occurring, but you also need to know what's happening in the other neighborhood so that we can correlate why. What works there that is not happening the other place? And so the ID issue is critical, absolutely critical. That needs to be a key part of it, that you cannot randomly and just identify people. And you don't have a situation where people, information is just being spread in the community as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we got to go to a break. We're going to continue this conversation, and I'm going to ask Ms. Major, let's talk about age-appropriate language and lessons for children and young people and adults and how important it is. And maybe I'll have some time to talk about these rapey by them. But more importantly, we need to talk about who has a duty to act when we suspect a child is being molested or abused or experiencing violence. That's my music. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We will be right back.
At Fidelity, the holidays are all about family, spending time with loved ones, and being thankful for the little things in life. Worrying about bills should be the last thing on your mind, especially during the holidays. Let Fidelity help you get your bills under control. Fidelity can also get you started with a real savings plan that actually pays you interest. The only thing you need to think about is what you will do with the savings in your pocket this Christmas. Now that's what I'm talking about. Fidelity Bank is here for you this holiday season because you are family, and family is important to us.
What happened to you?
You look like you lost your paycheck.
Man, I just realized I got scammed out of a bunch of money. They said I won this contest and just needed me to send them some money so I could collect. I mean, to expedite something. or was it to smooth the process?
Man, you're smarter than that. Protect yourself against scams and fraud by following these tips. If you know you didn't enter a competition, you can't win. Never play to receive a cash prize. If you're being asked, you're being scammed. Check trusted internet sites for verification of information given to you. Do not give your banking details to people you don't know. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. Monitor your bank account regularly for any questionable transactions. Get more information at GetMoneySmartBahamas.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. Listen, I forgot to give you all these numbers at the top of the show. You can call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. That's 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. Or you can text us on the Guardian Radio text line powered by BTC. And that's 422-4796. That's 422-4796. I have a brief PSA to all young women and young men out there. If that big grown man is playing with you and trying to keep your attention, snitch on him or her. Snitch on them. Let me repeat that. Snitch on him or her. Snitch on them. See, snitching, they like to use that term.
It's not snitching.
Ah, because to snitch, you have to be equally culpable or involved in the criminal act.
Exactly.
And you are the victim. And that big, grown, stinking, dirty person is the perpetrator. Snitch on them. Tell on them. Tell an adult. Tell a police officer. You could be discreet. Keep telling. Tell somebody you trust.
Tell someone until you're heard. Until someone hears you and until someone asks. Keep talking. Keep telling.
And listen, to the people who we tell, you got to moderate your behavior. Because these children, if they think you're going to go kill the person, they ain't going to tell you. They scared. They scared of everything. They scared of the police. They don't want the police come. They don't want you to go to jail because who can take care of them and protect them from the other predators if you go to jail? So what you gotta do is you gotta moderate your behavior. You gotta, in front of the children, you gotta say, listen, yeah, man, everything cool. I understand.
Even yes. If you have to step away and come back.
Yeah. And look here. When you cry, you tell your boys, I just hear about somebody molesting somebody close to me and I ain't ready for jail, so I have to sit here and cry before I hurt somebody. Your boys gonna understand. They're not going to make fun of you. They will understand. Unless your boys are the rapey by them. In which case, be careful.
Well, the crazy thing about it is even the rapey by them have feelings too when it affects their own, but they don't have the
right
feelings when they're doing it.
Right.
So I may be preying on someone else's defenseless child, but don't come for mine. Mm-hmm. So that's something to be concerned about too, or to talk about or bring awareness to also.
Yeah, as well. And we see that.
Mm-hmm.
We see that you think you were the champion. You think you were the soldier of children's rights. And then when you turn around, you realize, I can't leave my children with this boy neither.
And the thing is, know what opened my eyes to that? When I see the posters of the missing girls and I read through the comments, and these are people, wait, here's my friend though. We did some sessions together. This is how you're talking about this victim? Like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So it opens your eyes to the true character of people and what they really feel and what they really think. So be aware of that. Be mm-hmm. open to that. Look at those things.
Absolutely. And you gotta have conversations with people before you become so intimately involved with them. You don't know how to separate yourself from them. You gotta try and figure out who they are and how they're gonna behave and how they're gonna respond. And the truth is, access to data can help us with that. Now, I'm not just saying just throw the raw data out there like police reports and things like that. But if the data is available to advocacy groups and civil society groups that can take that data and pull from it information, then we then we have a tool to work with.
Once they have the information, they can create proper... Once they have the information, they know how to create programs that would actually work for specific communities and target audience if they have all of the information at hand and not just doing this because, hey, we've done this this long. Let's keep doing it, not knowing if it really works or not.
I know we're talking about sort of age of...
That's exactly right.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go on.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. The thing is, every effort, every program involves resources, money. And you don't want to be spending money just because there's money to spend. You want it to be targeted. You want it to be effective. And when it's not effective, you want to know that you have to change and why you have to change, which direction you have to turn for it to be effective. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff anecdotally you can get out of looking at data. Mm-hmm. But you really want to be specific. You want to be sure. And so the quality of that data, the consistency of the data, and the period of time, how much data you actually collect. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to decide on a particular thing, the more data you have, the better decision you should be able to make. You know, you look at these statistics on the births, and you have to wonder now, you know, if these bunch of under 16-year-olds are getting pregnant, that's the ones we know about who are giving birth, how many more are not showing up because they lost the child? Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think you're going to pop back in a moment.
And I think a lot of us, I'm guilty of this at times too, in terms of programming. We invest all of the money that we receive into the program.
Family sends them to a program. Never know what happens to them. Exactly. You don't ever know what happens with that. So mm-hmm. you look at this, and I'm saying to myself, well, if you have all of these pregnancies occurring at an age where, anecdotally again, we have to say that statutory rape occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where are the charges?
Yep.
Where are the charges? Where are the investigations? It may be that investigations were conducted, but we need to know that. You know that not factually. That so many investigations occurred and they turned out to be benign. But the point is, you need to know.
Right. And I just want to say this. It doesn't matter how fast or sexually advanced a 13-year-old girl is. It doesn't matter how many sexual partners she has had. Once you, a big grown adult, once you, a 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old, straight into crusty adulthood, male or woman, decide you're going to have sex with that child, you become a rapist. It don't matter what she is, where life has brought her, you are still the bad person. You are still the perpetrator. You are still the predator. It don't matter. I would say, not just that, this something that you just raised, Ken, I want to talk about it in terms of lessons, for age-appropriate lessons for children. When are adults and parents gonna start talking to their children and saying, listen, when I was your age, this is what happened to me. When I was your age, when we were your age, before I even reach your age now. That, I think, of all the lessons, of all, like, in the, because I want to talk about language and lessons, talk about proper names for body parts, but in all of the lessons that we could give our kids, is the lesson that this is not an isolated experience that you're having. The shame is not your shame to wear alone, as if it has happened to no one else ever in the history of the Bahamas. That me and my cousins, the people in our year, that we've been through this. Of course, now you're going to have to look in their eyes when they ask you, so what y'all did about it? You're going to have to look at them and answer that question, but you owe it to them to let them know that they are not alone. They are not strange. They are not the problem. Mm-hmm. That we and the culture we allow to persist is the problem.
I think as adults, when we get to a certain point of our lives, we want to forget all that we went through, all the things that we've overcome. So now when I see my child and my child is looking at me, they're looking at me as a role model. Mm-hmm. So I want to tell them all of the good things and negate to tell them all the struggle also. And it's okay. It's okay to have these age appropriate, of course. Don't tell the 4-year-old all the things you do when you're 20, 21. No, right. Keep it age appropriate.
Yeah.
But it's okay to have these conversations, and these conversations are ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't stop. I have a 22-year-old, and she still picks up the phone. Mommy, she lives on her own. She does her own thing, and we still have these one-on-one conversations. So it doesn't stop into adulthood. It keeps the conversation going. It keeps the line of communication open with your children. The younger you start. Now, if you're a new parent and you're just starting out, start as early as 2. Proper body parts. What are they called? What is the name? Who's supposed to touch you there? Like stuff like that. The good touch, bad touch talk, you know? When they're 6 to 8 years old, we're talking about puberty, what changes your body is going through. Things like that. Don't wait until your child is already experiencing something to talk about it. Talk about it beforehand so they can prepare themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you can prepare yourself also.
Yeah. And let me go to this caller quickly.
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the clock.
Hey, morning, Aaron.
Morning. How are you?
I am great, man. Good morning to your guest.
Good morning.
And to the gentleman. Miss Green.
Yes.
Children having children. So how could children who are having children tell their children how to conduct themselves, what to sign, what to look out for?
Would we expect them to know?
Okay, then.
Yeah.
If you look at it, Miss Green, let's be realistic. If you look at it, a lot of these young females are having children, right? And their mother had them when they were young. And maybe their mother had them when they were young. So it's like a cycle. So no one had time to tell that individual or sit them down to the facts of life, like the lady was starting to say at a certain age. Sometimes you have children, like, you know, when they get one, they go to the grandmother. The grandmother has to have all that strain and burden upon them. And they grow up maybe in an environment that is not conducive for them as a child, and that's what they adopt.
Yep.
You know, how many, see, like the lady who's in your guest,
yes.
You're a very fortunate person that you can sit down and talk to your child, but how many persons listening to this talk show don't have the courage or don't have the will to talk to that child because they feel that child going to say something to them negative? One of the reasons is the child is going to say something to you negative because you never took time out to talk to that child or to be with that child or try to groom that child in the best way that you want that child to go. As you being a parent, mom, the only thing you can do for your child or children is do the best. It's for them as the individual to say, look here, mommy did the best, daddy did the best. Let me see if I could do the best for myself.
And doing the best sometimes means breaking the cycle because I became a parent at 16.
Wow.
I became a parent at 16.
how many persons today, as you sit in that studio, can say the same thing that you're saying right now?
Quite a few, actually. It's just that we aren't hearing them and they're not speaking loudly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone has the opportunity that I have to come on in and have these conversations. But we are seeing more individuals. We are seeing it because I have programs that do it. We bring the young mothers, I have classmates who I went to Pace with, and I bring them in. And, hey, let's go back to Pace and have these conversations with these young girls because, hey, maybe their parents aren't equipped to have the conversation, but someone in their lives should be. Being a teen mother, I am able to see and understand from their experience and go back and talk to them and have the conversation with them.
Before I go, I encourage you, and I encourage you and hats off to you, ma'am, but let me say this to you, Ms. Green.
Mm-hmm.
It sickens my heart in a country that I live, that I feel that I contribute back to it in some way, in some form, that we wait as people, you know, when I say we, I'm including everyone in this, what I'm about to say.
Mm-hmm.
We wait until something happens to react.
Yeah.
This lady is in there talking right now. The little girl lost her life. If that didn't happen, do you think you would head out cry now? Do you know how much people in this country right now, children are being molested, abused as they listen
Oh, parents, yeah. On a daily basis.
Family members know that their child and children being abused.
And just playing in the background.
I know it. And they hearing it. They hearing us talking about it.
Let me listen to Aaron talk show this morning. And I know what you done do to your child or your grandchild last night.
Yeah. Listen to it.
Anyway, y'all have a good day, Miss Green.
Thank you.
And to your guests. Like I say, Mom, you know, blessings to you, man.
Thank you.
Miami, if persons like yourself and your age could come out and speak out, maybe you can, you know, save one or two other people.
That's right.
Have a good day.
Thank you, DeWitt. Now, listen, Denise, before I can read these three texts as the Shendo show ends. Give me your contact information for the organizations that you do work with, and give us some resources, just some resources like PACE. I'm sure a lot of people don't know that PACE exists.
Yes. Unfortunately, I don't have them on hand.
Okay,
the contact number, but I have the locations, so I can give you that. Okay.
All right.
So we have the PACE program. They're a school for young mothers, teen mothers. We have the SCAN unit that helps suspected child abuse unit that deals with child abuse. We have a unit similarly for the teens who are being abused. Right. We have the adolescent health clinic that offers services to young adults who may find themselves in certain situations. They're pregnant. They need health care services. That's what the Adolescent Health Care Services Unit is for. We have many organizations that are doing the work. We have Lend a Hand Bahamas, organized by Sheila Pritchard. We have the Zonta Club. We have Teen Life Skills Services. Mm-hmm. We have many programs. We don't have enough workers. We don't have enough volunteers. But the programs do exist. We have people on the ground daily.
Mm-hmm.
Who are doing their best. And I agree with the caller when he speaks about the outrage. We find this anger and this outrage when things happen to this extreme. Mm-hmm. But these things are happening daily. Like you said, they're listening to the show and they just finished molesting that child, or the child has been left home alone, or something is happening while they listen to this show.
Yeah.
So I agree with the caller with that aspect.
Absolutely. I also want to say that don't forget, we have the Child and Family Services Division of the Department of Social Services. And there are four separate units within that division, including the Child Protection Services Unit, the Child Care Facilities Unit, the Child Placement Unit, and the Family Services Unit. And all of these units have some degree of responsibility or oversight for children and families. So there are a number of mechanisms, agencies, and organizations working around the issue. I think what we need now is
mobilization
and the data to help us better mobilize the resources that we do have, create better networks. And then I think we don't really focus on the second part of the work. We have to do the work, and then we have to focus on building a culture of appreciation for the week. But them on the court need to understand why every 2 weeks, once a month, these moms can come and they're going to pull us in and they're going to expect us to participate. Because, I want to smoke my joint. I want to drink this Guinness because I don't want to go home yet because that woman making noise. But this is an important thing, and we could do it. And brethren, just either get high before you come, or expect to get pinched by mom. We have to grow that culture of appreciation for this work. And we can't expect the people who are doing the work to also focus on growing the culture of appreciation for the work.
And it's all about strengthening the village. The village does exist.
Yes.
We still have that village. It's just that it needs to be strengthened. And these are the tools we have to incorporate to strengthen the village.
And we have to acknowledge that it's not just women and feminists out here talking. This men are out here concerned and doing the work, which is why I wanted to bring Mr. Clark on the show. Because although he's not involved in any organization, this is a man who said, I have skills and I can use them to help create a solution. And that's what we appreciate.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. All right.
Yes, thank you.
I'm almost out of time. I hope Mr. Clark is available next week, Wednesday, to come in again with Ms. Major so we can continue this discussion. We need to talk about who has a duty of care. We need to continue talking about age-appropriate lessons and language for children. We need to talk about the pros and cons of the sex offender registry.
And the age of consent.
Oh, gosh, I forget that. We're going to have a whole show about the age of consent and how we have to, parents. I'm not a parent. Maybe soon. You never know. But we have to balance our fear and concern about raising our children with the need to give them the tools they need for their proper development. And not teaching them about consent and personal and bodily autonomy in an attempt to make parenting easier is very problematic, people.
Very.
Anyway, I am out of time, so I got to read these texts, guys, before we go. First text, good morning, Aaron. The statistics on underage and teenage pregnancies were sad. How many men were brought before the courts for child abuse in these cases? In fact, between the new Minister of National Security and the new Minister of Social Services, we know we're going to get them stats soon. We know that because these are men of honor, right?
Updated stats from 2013.
Right, update, because those stats were from 2013. Another text, great show as usual. What about the bus drivers preying on these little girls because these bus drivers ain't saved?
And when they get caught, we charge them a $200 fine. Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, I was dating a girl when I was in high school. I overheard a grandmother tell her, don't let no man ride you for free. I was like, wow. That girl, Grammy, bad. The gal was bad, and the mother was selling her. See, this is another instance when you see young women in these situations. They didn't wake up and was born that way. They've been groomed. Another text, Aaron saying, children having children is not good. It's foolishness. Even adults have children, and they go wrong. My mom was married at 14 and have five kids doing okay. That's not what we were saying.
No.
Children cry, but yet they come. What we're saying is when you know the children are being born into homes, families, and communities that are ill-prepared to take care of them, then we as a collective have a responsibility to step in.
And continuing the cycle and not breaking that cycle.
When we see children having children, you got to support them. Last text, Ms. Green, do we have a sex offenders registry? I don't think we do yet, but that's a big conversation we have to have because people who don't like to stop at stop signs, I'm not sure if they can handle the responsibility of a public sex offenders registry. Anyway, my producer is kicking me off the air. Thank you to Ms. Major. Thank you to Mr. Clark. You guys have a great day. Stay tuned. Levon Miller and Unleash is up next.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
This is the Guardian News Network update on the hour. Hello, everyone. I'm Charlene Ferguson. Disturbing new data found that one in four female students at university in this country at